From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Thursday, April 30. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. As of this afternoon, Australia has recorded 6,746 cases of coronavirus. But since yesterday, nationwide, just 8 new cases have been confirmed as we continue to flatten the curve. I'm joined now by North American correspondent Matthew Knott. Welcome back to Please Explain, Matt.
No worries. Good to be here.
As usual, when you join me on the podcast, you're in an airport somewhere. Where are you in transit from at the moment?
I'm in Atlanta Airport now, transiting back from Albany in southwestern Georgia.
For starters, I was amazed that you were allowed to even travel interstate in the United States, but I'm glad you were. Tell us what's happening in Georgia.
Yes, well, Albany, Georgia, where I went, has been one of the hardest hit areas from the coronavirus, particularly when you look on a per capita basis. It's only slightly behind New York. It's a really sad story. It started there at a funeral. It became what's been called a super spreader event and then went really rapidly through the community. It's a very poor area, predominantly African-American, so a lot of underlying health conditions there. And it has really devastated that city.
Before we get into what it was like, just in case our HR department's listening, What did you do to make sure you didn't get sick when you were there?
I took a lot of precautions. I have been anyway, but definitely wearing a mask all the time and a lot of regular hand sanitizing, and definitely staying further away from people than you usually would when you're out interviewing people. But I was surprised to find in the travel, not everyone on the plane, say, was wearing a mask, pretty relaxed. No one's asking you if you're sick. That side of it, I was surprised by.
Mm. Now, tell us what it was like in Albany. How are people holding up?
Well, it's very, very quiet. One of the reasons we went there, of course, was because the Georgia governor has decided to allow pretty much all businesses to reopen, including dine-in restaurants just the day before I arrived there, but also things like nail salons, bowling alleys, tattoo parlors. And so that's why I thought it would be an interesting place to go, because you've got one of the worst outbreaks and then you've got some of the loosest rules around what people can do. So I thought, how are these two things intersecting? And the downtown area is absolutely deserted. No one is around at all. It feels like an abandoned movie set. The only people we saw were in the brewery there, and that was really busy. They've converted into a hand sanitizing manufacturer and they're running 24 hours a day, sending it all around the country. They've stopped making beer. But then when you started going around and looking around, you did find places that were open. I went to a gym. It turns out that quite a few gyms are open, even though that seems like a pretty risky place to me, given people are sweating and breathing heavily on each other. Visited one of those, found a nail salon that was open, found barbers and hairdressing salons that were open, found a woman who was taking her 4-year-old son to get his haircut. So businesses have faced a really tough decision about what to do. You know, the support from the government here and for small business has been a bit of a disaster. People still haven't got money. The level of support for individuals isn't as much as in somewhere like Australia or the UK. So a lot of people basically said we didn't have any choice but to reopen our business and do the best that we can to keep it safe.
And at what point on the curve is Albany? I mean, are they still mid-pandemic?
They seem to be coming down, plateauing. It's not completely eradicated, but it has slowed down there, as it has in Georgia. Obviously, the fear people have is if it's going to start up again.
Certainly, the United States and the poorer parts of the United States are not famous for the quality of their healthcare system. Have people been looked after?
There is a hospital there which anyone can access, you know, even if they don't have health insurance. So I think that's been a good thing. I definitely struggled to cope for a while with the amount of people. Our testing is still not that widespread in Georgia. So there's the question about that, about how well you know what is going on. That wasn't really the big part of it. It wasn't like the healthcare system itself failed. It was simply the amount of people who got infected really fast from these big gatherings at funerals and then at church and then at the courthouse, these places where lots of people are interacting. That's how it got out there so fast.
And how many people have died so far?
In Albany, it's around 130.
Right.
Yeah, and so that's more than Australia and New Zealand combined, just about, and it's a city of 75,000 people. So most people there know someone who's had coronavirus or even someone who's died.
And you went to a drive-through funeral home?
Yes, this was one of the strange experiences, I must say, that I've had as a journalist, also because someone mentioned this drive-through a funeral parlor, and so we went there. And he had been in the funeral industry his whole life. This guy had been the state funeral inspector, so he knows a lot about what he's doing. And then he opened up his own funeral parlor in February. It's a former bank, and it was a drive-through bank. And so he's converted it into a drive-through funeral parlor. And he opened in February 1, and that's just as the coronavirus was starting. So he said that he's done 15 funerals and 14 of them were coronavirus victims.
So how does a drive-through funeral parlour work?
So what he's offering now is the option that obviously funerals are limited now, just as everything else, in how many people can come. So you can have 10 people at a funeral. What he offers is the option that you can have the casket in the drive-through area. Imagine driving up to a McDonald's. So you can drive up, look into the casket. This is a big part, I think, more so of funerals here, the seeing the body. And driving up, see it, pay your respects, cry, leave a note, leave something in the coffin, and then drive on so that you're not all gathering together.
So he says there's
a lot of interest in doing that.
Oh, look. This pandemic has brought about some very strange and ingenious ideas. The people you spoke to, what did they think about the leadership of their mayor, their governor and their president?
It was really interesting to speak to people, and I was interested in that the decisions they were making in their own businesses or their own lives didn't necessarily tie together with what they thought about the overall decisions. I spoke to one restaurant owner and he said it doesn't make any economic sense for him now to open up his steakhouse because it's relatively small. You need lots of people in there to make any money. But he said he supports the decision to reopen. He said, this is America. It's not the government's role to tell us what to do. It's up to each individual business to decide. Then I spoke to a barber shop owner and he was open for businesses, but he felt really guilty about it. He said, honestly, we should be at home. I shouldn't be here. I don't think we should be allowed to be reopen again, but I don't have any other way of paying the bills, so I've got to do it. So you see quite a diversity there.
So Matt, the governor of Georgia, is he on the Trump side of this debate about just let it rip and open the economy? Is that why he's done it?
Well, yes, and he's even gone further than Trump would like. That's the thing that's amazing about this. The governor of Georgia is a very conservative Republican. He came to national prominence when he got elected for starring in a campaign ad in which he pointed a rifle at his daughter's boyfriend to show how much he believes in the Second Amendment. And so when the Trump administration announced this plan to have a phased reopening of the economy, he went really fast and said in 4 days, pretty much all these businesses can reopen. And the experts spoke to Trump, it seems, and said this is just way too fast. And Trump himself has criticized him for going too far too soon. And most public experts have criticized him.
Okay, so let's just have a quick conversation about Donald Trump and how he's going.
Yeah.
He has probably quite sensibly wound back his daily briefings where he had the opportunity to, you know, suggest some pretty wild and wacky treatments that people took exception to. How is Donald Trump's popularity at the moment?
Yes, I know the last time we spoke, we were talking about the fact that his approval ratings were at an all-time high, and that's not the case anymore. They've come back to exactly where they were at the start of the whole pandemic. And this is while he's been doing pretty much every day a two-hour televised briefing. Democrats were actually getting worried for a while because they were saying Trump's dominating the national stage, Joe Biden's basically invisible. But the evidence suggests that it hasn't worked for Trump to be that exposed to the public. And it definitely came to a head last week when he was floating ideas about disinfectants and UV light, it exposed him to a lot of ridicule. And it's clear that from now, he'll definitely appear from time to time when he's got something to say, but he's going to be doing a lot fewer of these daily briefings.
So it turns out that too much Trump is actually too much Trump.
Yes, and there is evidence to suggest this goes back to the 2016 election. His polls actually dipped when he was in the spotlight and when Hillary Clinton was getting attention for her emails and everything. He did better, but it's in his nature to want to be at the center of attention. So people are still asking, how long can he let it go without controlling the daily news cycle? Because he's pretty much addicted to it.
Well, Matt, you're headed back to DC now. Take care of yourself. Look forward to reading your coverage this weekend.
Thank you very much. Sorry for the ambient airport noise.
It happens. Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Nicole Presell and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech teams at The Age and The Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.